they invite me to this, my thoughts and parts, and I'm like, okay, I'll go. So when I got there before.
Good.
We have one of these, we have a second one coming, but I've been.
Okay. Good afternoon. Want to welcome everybody out to this meeting of the Bipartisan Election Advisory Committee. Appreciate your continued participation. I know it is a busy time for many people, and so particular thanks to our one legislator of our four who made it. So kudos to you. We'll go ahead and start by just going around the room with introductions. My name is Wayne Williams. I'm the Colorado Secretary of State.
I'm Judd Choate. I'm the State Election Director. I'm going to go backwards. We'll go through here.
Carolyn Tatro, Special District Association. Go back
this way. Jason Bertolacci, Let Colorado Vote.
John Bradley with Senator Fenberg.
Connor Bunting with Senator Fenberg.
Carrie Kellogg, Jefferson County Clerk and Recording Office.
Michelle Beatty, Colorado County Clerks Association. Lori Mitchell, Chaffee County Clerk and Recorder.
Okay. Dan Pabone, State Representative, House District 4.
Jack Tate, State Senate, 27.
Karen Goldman, Colorado Municipal League.
Jennifer Levin, Disability Law, Colorado.
Elena Nunez, Colorado Common Cause.
Martha Tierney, Colorado Democratic Party.
Matt Crane, Arapahoe County Clerk and Recorder.
Pam Bacon, Logan County Clerk and Recorder and President of the Clerks Association.
Steve House, Chairman of the Colorado Republican Party.
Jennifer Morrell, Arapahoe County Clerk and Recorder's Office.
Elizabeth Steele, Colorado Common Cause.
George Athanasopoulos, applicant to be Lynn Bartle's sidekick.
Connor Blevins, Elections Division intern.
Hi, Ben Schler, staff with the Elections Division.
Okay, there are some folks who are, where's our mic at? Pam, can you, or Len, can you grab that mic and take it to Merlin, please?
Merlin Klotz, Douglas County Clerk and Recorder.
Okay. Folks who are confusing us by walking in late after we've passed the mic by you. Senator, thanks for joining us as well.
Hi, Amber McReynolds. I'm here for Clerk Deborah Johnson.
Senator Steve Fenberg, Senate District 18. I am replacing Senator Moreno today. Next time it'll be somebody different.
You stayed in your own legislative body this time. Good.
Actually, that crew right behind you did not get. So Jennifer and Elizabeth.
Yeah, they did.
No, you did? Okay. My apologies. I wasn't paying attention to her.
And then we've, Amber, can you pass it on to Ben, who's then going to pass it over to the people in back who joined us late. So.
Who do we have here?
Amanda Beach, Denver Elections Division.
Lisa Stubbs, Election Division, Denver.
Thanks. We also have J.M. Fay with us today as well. So thank you all for being here. Reminder that if you do speak, we ask that you state your name ahead of time so that, or at the start of your statement so that you can be there. We have a short PowerPoint and some more data points to present because we know how much people like data. And we think that these give you a pretty good idea of how Election Day was going and on some specific areas. And so I'm going to turn the time over to Judd for both presentations.
Okay, so a couple of things. First, you all should have a copy of this, which is a spreadsheet that lines out usage per location, so transactions per location, broken down by hours across every location, every VSPC location in Colorado. Another one of these printouts that looks very similar to this is coming, and that one breaks down by half an hour at 6 p.m. and beyond. So you can see half an hour chunks all the way until the last vote was cast in the 11 o'clock hour. So two of those that you can look at, and I won't be insulted at all if you are reading diligently that and not paying attention to my PowerPoint, no worries. So what we, one of the things we wanted to do here was to go over some of the suggestions that were made at the last meeting. So I've listed out two pages of these suggestions, and then after the suggestions, we're going to go into some of the data that was requested at the last meeting. And then we'll go through each one of the suggested policy changes and in many cases kind of talk to you about what the statute already says or what rule would need to be changed. As we get into the detail of it, feel free to kind of ask questions and delve deeper into the particular policy questions. If you don't see something here that maybe you heard last time or you want to add, feel free to throw it in. We're certainly not constraining ourselves to the things that are discussed here. So some of the suggestions that came up in the last conversation were to eliminate the first week of early voting at the VSPCs for a general election. That was sort of the blanket eliminate. And then there was a number of modifies. Or it'll allow perhaps the Secretary of State to waive or allow changes to parts of the formula. And those various parts that we list here are eliminate the first Saturday, decrease the required number of VSPCs for those first 6 to 10 days of early voting, waive the formula based on geography or population centers, so a county that had everybody populated in one particular location, set or waive the formula based on throughput calculus, increase the number of VSPCs on Monday and Election Day, and adjust active voter tier. So this is basically create a fourth tier and maybe reset the thresholds so as to have different requirements for counties in different circumstances. Next page. So these were other suggestions. Require VSPC hours outside of traditional work hours. Allow earlier ballot mailing dates, so counties could mail out before the 22nd day prior to the election. Explicitly allow mobile VSPC locations. That's currently permitted under law, but there's no mention of it, and so we don't really have any rules or policies about it. Mandate or encourage public schools to serve as polling places, polling locations. Typically, we would be talking about Monday and Tuesday of election week. Rules for counties, county uniformity for VSPC, public comment process. So currently, that's sort of a hit and miss process. The SOS would review or approve county VSPC plans. Currently, we don't do that. And set VSPC best practice policies. So this would be the way you set up, the way you set up throughput for a particular location and put that in rule. So those were many of the major discussion points from the first conversation about this. Okay, refreshing you on data. You may remember this one from last time. It's kind of an oldie but goodie. 214,499 transactions over the course of early voting, including the significant total on Election Day. Next slide. the once again broken down by type of transactions. So we have new voters, updating voters, what we call existing voters, and then total transactions, again set up throughout that period. Next. So in the last meeting, Steve House came up with this great idea, which took us a couple of days to try to figure out, but we came up with a way of trying to measure voter propensity. So what we tried to do in this calculation was to figure out if people who vote early are more likely to vote anyway. And what we found was that there does seem to be a relationship between when you vote in early voting and your likelihood to vote anyway. If you see, what we've done is broken it down by October 17th. That was the day that ballots could go out. It wasn't the day that VSPCs opened, but in many counties they did open during that period. And measure that all the way until the last Friday before the election. Is that right? No, through the last Monday, including the last Friday and Saturday, and then we start the next weekend of the Monday. And then the second group of people is for the Monday of October 31st through the Monday of November 7th, and then Election Day. So what you can see is that in presidential elections, the group that voted in this early voting period would vote in a presidential election 64% of the time, and voted in all presidential elections 64% of the time. The second group in 53% of the time, the third group that voted on Election Day, votes in all presidential elections for which they were eligible 47% of the time. If you look at that only using even year generals, so this would be your congressional elections in addition to your presidential, the number is 35% vote in all of those for that group that voted in the first 2 weeks or week and a half plus. And then 25 and then 20%. If you look at it for all primaries, it's 14, 7, and 3. And then all coordinateds, which my computer does not like that as a word, coordinateds was 27, 17, and 10. So we do seem to have a relationship across each one of these categories, suggesting that this group of people, this top group of people that voted early in the early voting session is more likely just to vote. I think that's a fair interpretation, that they would probably, in these groups of people, be the most likely to just vote under all circumstances. Any questions about that before we move on? It's kind of a, we had to do some interesting calculus to come up with some mic. Could you pass the mic?
So just to make sure that I'm interpreting you right, mm-hmm. and everybody is, what you're saying is if we pushed out a week or we didn't do that first week, mm-hmm. that we are still likely to capture the bulk of voters voting. They're just going to move to the second week because they're high propensity voters anyway.
So I think a fair interpretation of this is that the people who vote during early voting or even vote in that period of time before VSPCs open are more likely to vote anyway. I don't know if they're completely likely to vote. We might lose some of them. But certainly the data across all these elections would seem to indicate that they are the most likely to vote group of the people that voted in person.
Which was your suggestion originally was to cut out that first week, which this sort of supports that as far as I can see.
Well, I think the data supports that we can still provide great access if we do cut that first week, but I also said we'd still do it in our offices, so if we could pare it down that way. But just to say, but right. And this is backed up by national studies, too, as recently, I think it's December 29th in the Washington Post, I think that was the day, where they affirmed this on a national basis, too, that the people that vote early are still likely to vote. It doesn't bring in, it doesn't expand the pool, it doesn't bring in more voters. It just allows more access to the people who are already going to vote anyway.
Other questions, comments about this particular slide? We can always come back to it if it comes back in the conversation. So after conversation last time, what we did was start breaking down the election day numbers to give you some sense about when the lines happened and what the relationship was between the transactions that we are seeing, sort of the throughput and the time of day. Couple of things to explain here. First, we had 64 people that voted before they were actually eligible to vote that morning. Those are like stray ones across a number of counties. I think it's because they were issuing ballots at 6:59. They were like a little trigger happy. But we see just a couple of people in that early hour. Then you can see across these numbers about 10,000, about 10,000, about 10,000, about 10,000, about 10,000, about 10,000, about 10,000. And then we have our outage, which occurred at 2:14 and lasted for, depending upon how you calculate it, 29 minutes. Our number is more like 24, 25 minutes, but 29 minutes is the agreed upon amount. So you can see that that number went down pretty significantly in that hour. And then it starts ramping back up again in the 3 and 4 o'clock hour. Again, doesn't quite reach 10,000. And then we're in the 12,000s and 13,000s for the next couple of hours. And then the numbers that I think a lot of people are very interested in is what happens after 7 p.m. After 7 p.m., between 7 and 8, we were about half of the total number of voters that we had between 6 and 7 at 5,500 or so. And then between 8 and 9, we have that again at about 2,400. And then between 9 and 10, around just less than 1,000. And then we had 156 people who voted between 10 and 11 p.m. And one that voted between 11 and 12. But I just want to tell you that that actually is a bad piece of data. So it's just on there at that time. What I think, by the way, just looking at it, it's from Pueblo. The reason why I think it's they're already working on provisional ballots. And they did it that night, and they gave it to this day. But that is just a guess based on the data.
Well, let me, if you look at Pueblo, you'll actually see that they didn't have anybody at the site at 9:30 or at 10, and then they had two at 11 and 11:30. So it's clear they're coming from some other source.
Yeah.
And that's on page.
If we have pages on that one. I don't know.
Page numbering will do better.
Pueblo. Just look, it's alphabetical.
It's alphabetical, but if you find Pueblo, you can see that it's at the Barkman Library, and it looks like, indeed, yes, they were doing something else because they had a gap with no voters of more than an hour.
Can I ask one quick question? So the hourly totals that you have at the bottom there are at the top of the hour?
They are all the transactions which occurred between those 2 hours.
Okay, and then did you incorporate, I know that there's sort of 13,000 that were not recorded through WebScore.
Uh-huh.
I don't know who those counties were, but for whatever reason,
not
are those
names.
Incorporated here?
They are not incorporated in this.
So there's that, so 13,000 that are not on there.
Uh-huh.
By
sure.
Hour, and there's probably no way to, well, maybe there is.
And it's actually for our understanding of the data is that that's not actually 13,000, it's 6,000, 5,900 that were provisional ballots, that bucket, plus the 7,500 or so that doesn't appear to have occurred at a BSPC input, at a web score input.
Well, so about 7,500 that are not on here that
that's
were
right.
In-person transactions
right.
But didn't go through the web score application?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Any other questions? We're talking to those counties, by the way, just as a note, as a side note about proper usage of VSPC. So this was statewide, but I thought you might find it interesting to break this down a little bit differently across some counties to see what this number, so take a visual of what this looks like, and then we'll go through a couple of counties. Next one is Douglas County. So Douglas County has this tremendous advantage, which is that they have access to those high schools. You can see that their numbers between, you know, 4 to 5, 5 to 6, 6 to 7 are all pretty steady. And then suddenly from 7 to 8, they had 28 people that voted. So at 7 o'clock, they had pretty much processed most everybody except for the stragglers that were coming in right then, and they could process them very quickly. And that is in pretty stark contrast to a number of other counties that didn't have access to these larger facilities. So the next one is El Paso County. You can see their curve here is much more pronounced and doesn't drop off. And in fact, 6 to 7, they had 1,100 people, but in 7 to 8, they again had 1,000. So between 7 and 8 o'clock, they had 1,000 more people. Then 8 to 9, they've got 662. 9 to 10, 4:15 or 4:13, and then 10 to 11, 57 people are still voting. I think personally that that speaks to quality of facility. I think El Paso made, you know, very good decisions based on what they had available, but unfortunately they didn't have access to schools, and that kind of demonstrates that. Go one slide back, because I think Merlin wants to get a picture of his own county. I'll send it to you. Okay. All right. Okay, El Paso. And then what I did was go to the next one. I picked on our most popular VSPC in the state. This is at the CSU, so Colorado State VSPC. This is the one that's on campus in Larimer County. Their activity across the day was also very similar. If for those of you that have been there, it's a big place, and they can do a lot of throughput in that, and you can again see that significant fall off that occurred between 6 and 7 and beyond. Some of that is maybe about the timing of how those people vote, because that's a pretty, you know, tight group of people. But then you can also see they didn't have a lot of stragglers after polls closed. By the way, you'll see that in their maximum hour, they had over 200. They never had an hour that was like an hour where you're supposed to vote. They never had an hour that was fewer than 41. Show us the next slide. Next slide is Logan County. I'm kind of picking on one of my BIAC colleagues here. So this is Logan County and their three sites. They never had a location that was at 41 at any hour during the day. And in fact, if you added their top hour with the numbers from the other two locations in their county, they were barely 41 in one hour. So the least used or the most used VSPC had 1 hour that was competitive with the most used Logan County if you combine all three of their VSPCs, which probably speaks in some respect to what Pam has been saying about loosening the reins on some of the smaller counties. So any questions about this series of slides kind of showing how VSPC activity happened over the day? Yeah.
So just to clarify, in the Larimer County VSPC, when you said the most popular, that site had more voters processed than any other site?
Yes. So if you look at the first of the two spreadsheets that I gave you, once you go back one slide, if you look at the first of the two and look at the far right-hand column, and it shows how many people were processed in those VSPCs, each one of the locations across each of the counties. The highest number in there is 1,800, and that was in Larimer County at the CSU location. We had probably another 10 to 12 in the state that had over 1,000, but the CSU location was significantly the highest statewide.
Let me clarify that. That's based on the data we have. If you look at Boulder, though, Senator Fenberg, your home, you'll notice there's a bunch of blanks, and that's because Boulder's loss of the ability to connect meant that they were issuing provisional ballots. They got their CU site back up and running, so you see the University of Colorado, UMC, showing throughput pretty much throughout the day. And they got two of their other sites up and running, their main office, and I think the Longmont office, if I remember right. But the rest of those show blanks. And Boulder was issuing more ballots than that. It's just because of the high number of provisionals, which aren't captured in the same wet score app. It is possible that with 1,277, you know, the CU Boulder site had some more people than that, mm-hmm. but the one we've got complete data for is the CSU site. But it shows the difference, and you can look at those. We've done graphs here, but every site in the entire state is here. So you can look at it, and we chose to graph a few, but you could do your own graph of any one of these, and you're going to see similar numbers that follow, but you also see the huge difference if you look at Douglas County, since we had that slide up there. And you've got sites that are pushing through a lot of throughput, but they're large sites, so you've got one or two voters being served after 7 o'clock. And the ability to have a large enough site with enough stations to get voters through efficiently really does make a difference. And you know, there's a reason why the Douglas County School Board's gotten an award for it, because it is a great way of making it work. And Judd's going to talk more about that a little bit later.
Sure.
So, Judd,
yeah,
on El Paso, you're going to go to it.
Secretary's going to walk us through some El Paso.
So that 1,100 votes that came after 8 o'clock, mm-hmm. A failure, what happened there? I mean, how did we get 1,100 votes after 8 o'clock?
So people online, I'm assuming? We believe it's a combination of two factors. One is El Paso County had a disproportionately and almost double the amount of new voters, so new registrations. New registrations just take so much longer. If you're checking somebody in, you're going, Steve House, there he is. No, he hasn't voted. Here's your ballot. If you're getting a new registration together, you are, you know, pounding the keys. You're making sure they're eligible. So there's a lot more to it. It takes a lot longer. So they had a disproportionately high number of new voters. And then secondly, they had a lot of small locations and just not a lot to work with in terms of buildings that were available to them where they could get a lot of throughput.
So maybe Senator Tate could propose that we eliminate same-day registration on voting day. I don't know. Maybe.
So we've got a couple other hands, Senator Fenberg, and then Clerk Klotz.
Thanks. So I just want to make sure I'm reading correctly. If there were votes that came in, let's say around 11, that means somebody was waiting for up to 4 hours to vote.
That is the right interpretation of that.
But
yeah.
Okay. There's no votes. There's the one Pueblo one that's after 11. But, yes, they were waiting up
right,
to three
right.
And a half
but
hours. You're right.
Let's say in El Paso, for
yep.
instance. Yep.
But they weren't there just to vote, right? They were there to use some service other than voting.
Well, anyone who's in line. So just so everybody knows the rule, in Colorado, as long as you're in line by 7 p.m., you get to vote, and it doesn't matter how long that line takes, you still have the right to vote. So the voting hours are automatically extended for as long as anybody needs them to be extended. But you're right. That's people waiting for 3.5 hours in order to cast a ballot. And I suspect the ones at the very end are the ones that came in at the very end. So, but it's what happens when you have this huge number, a combination of two things that just said, small sites. So let me point out something else that's on this chart here. You have the number of users, and that's this blue column that's on here. We don't have square footage totals or station totals from the counties reliably. What we do have is how many users in SCORE were logged in. So in other words, we can tell you how many people were logged in at each site. Now, different counties set it up different ways. In some counties, they might have a couple check-in clerks, and then they go to others. So this is not totally apples to apples, but it's the closest thing we have to give you kind of a sense of how big a site might be. And so if you look at, I think the last one is in El Paso. It's a security fire department, which is in southern El Paso. And you can see that they had 5 people logged in there compared to 13 at their main site, at the main clerk's office, some other sites that had up to 11. And so it had to do with the throughput at the security fire department. It's a tiny little community room. And when you have a bunch of new registrations and not many stations to do it at, that's what happens.
So what would that's really helpful. What would a user be logged in for, other than checking voters in? Just out of curiosity.
You might hand it to Amber. She could probably tell you.
Well, and I was going to say too, this is the total number of users that were logged in at any given point
all
during the
day.
Because yep. when you're shifting people in and out, so this mm-hmm. doesn't mean that this yep. number was at one time. Mm-hmm. But like supervisor judges. could be logged in and they could be handling a provisional that isn't actually getting recorded immediately on the spot. So they could be looking up their district information or trying to research. So there could be that. People could be pulling reports. A lot of counties will reconcile sort of different points throughout the day and might use a computer for that. So there's a variety of reasons, but I think I would just say that this number reflects the total number for the day, not at one point. So I think that's a, because that's why you see some of the disparity with what happens during the hour. And then the other thing on the vote time itself, I mean, we had a couple voters that require some of the accessibility. I mean, there, I think we recorded a few voters spending over an hour and a half just on the voting, like voting their ballot because they, you know, are blind and using the equipment. It just takes longer. It takes longer to verify. So that doesn't mean that they waited necessarily, but they might have been spending that time on their own within the VSPC, which can certainly happen. So I would just point that out because we always want to make sure we accommodate those situations and don't, you know, we're not going to rush people. We had the 20-minute thing, I think, in law that, frankly, is not enforceable because some people just need extra time. So there's that, too.
Yeah, let me add one other thing to it. If you look, you'll see often the main office is going to have more people logged in, and that's because they may be doing some other election-related things that aren't necessarily at the VSPC, but the data doesn't always distinguish between who's at the counter helping VSPC versus who's at the counter behind doing a UACAVA ballot or some other issue along that line. So there, so we're not telling you the data's perfect, but it gives you a pretty good idea of how big the site was in terms of judges' throughput, which is, and it's the best data we had, so that's why we're providing it to you.
Yeah, it's a great point. That's exactly what I was going to say. The other thing I would note is that if you look at the larger sites statewide, so the sites that handled 80, 90, 100 people an hour, so the ones across these various hours where you can see these big numbers, those are the ones that tend to drop off right at about 7, 7:30, 8 o'clock. You're not seeing a lot of activity at those. The ones where you're seeing this activity go on and on and on to 10 and 11 o'clock into those hours, those are the ones that handled 45, 45, 45, 45, 45 across the entire day because that was the entire throughput that they could get through that location. And then at 8 o'clock, they also did 45. And at 9 o'clock, they also did 45 because those people were standing in line at those locations which couldn't handle a lot of throughput.
The CSU example is a good one. This is not Larimer Clark's main office, but they have 17 people logged in there. So why were they able to handle a high throughput and virtually nobody after 7 o'clock? Because they had a nice, massive site that CSU let them use. And that's great that they did, but not every place does.
Okay.
Merlin.
Merlin, did you have a comment?
Amber, can you
pass that along?
Thanks.
You made the point that it's size and new registrations. I can't speak to exactly how many we had new registrations on election day, but 10% of our voters registered after October 1st. Mm-hmm. So, and I would guess that there's a proportionate share on there. Mm-hmm. The other thing that the larger facility brings is a much better organization. You're much better able to organize and deal with your problem areas, your problem issues, and keep things moving.
Yeah, very, very good point. The secretary suggested that we better understand how sites are selected. And one of the criteria that I know El Paso County has put some energy into is trying to understand the driving distance that a person would have to you know, occupy in a car in order to make it to one of their VSPCs. So we asked for some information from El Paso County to try to illustrate that. So go to the next slide, and I'm going to let the secretary explain this.
So we had a little discussion last week, a couple weeks ago, about how sites get selected and what the criteria should be. This is the map of El Paso County's VSPC locations. And El Paso County is a fairly large county. It's larger than two states. Connecticut is slightly larger, but it's bigger than Rhode Island or Delaware. And if you look at the map, it looks like much of the county is underserved in terms of VSPCs. Next slide, please.
But when you actually look at the drive time, and this is in minutes, you've got 98.3% of this county that is within 15 minutes of a site. So go back, if you would. So there's in that all that wide area of the county, there's a total of 6,000 people, and they're incredibly widely dispersed. And this is of total voters, not active voters. This is not just those that voted at BSPCs. So they're, so that counties use data like this and trying to map it out. If you're the city of Denver, it's going to be a very different looking map because Denver doesn't have vast tracts of land that are unpopulated with the exception of DIA. Maybe there were a lot of people there living there on election day. But it's the type of data that you use. And so if you said, and I'm not saying we should do this because I think it's a really bad idea, every voter must be within X minutes of a VSBC, you're going to have a voter, a VSBC down in Rush that might see a single voter the entire day. If you said, you know, if you tried to set criteria, the criteria for a county like El Paso are going to be very different from a similar population area in Denver because of the nature of the county. And so just wanted you to kind of see the way that looks. If you did, if you flipped it on its side and called this Douglas County, that little one all by itself would be called Larkspur as opposed to Calhoun, where you try and say, well, something needs to be there for the people who live way away from the rest of us. Next slide, please. And so that gives you the number of based on drive time. So 3/4 of the people were within 5 minutes of a site, 90% were within 7 minutes of a site. And so counties that have large number of VSPCs use data like this to try and come up with where those sites are going to be. And as a result, if you look at El Paso, you'll see that they had similar numbers coming through all the sites except for Calhoun, which is a lot less because that's that one way out in the Eastern Plains. That's the EPC Public Services Department on the page. Next slide. So now we go back to Jed.
So we wanted to go through some of the specifics on the recommendations. So first major recommendation that we wanted to discuss that was on that list at the beginning was to eliminate the first week. So in order to eliminate the first week, we would have to change a law, maybe a couple. And so we laid out the actual verbiage from the statute as it's currently written, speaking first to what a general election's like and then giving you the verbiage from a primary or coordinated election as sort of a jumping off point for potential changes to that language. Any discussion about this? I can just kind of go through each one of these and then come back to them.
Go through and then come back.
Okay. Modifying the VSPC formula. So we could eliminate the first Saturday. You could decrease the number of VSPCs for the first week, waive the formula for the geography and population centers, set or waive a formula for the calculus. All of these are ones that are possible.
Yeah, so the set wave formula based on throughput calculus, right now the standard for VSPC is must have a station to handle things. So you could say or have some criteria that says if you're a county, you can apply to consolidate sites if you have more throughput than you would otherwise. So I'll pick Logan County since Pam's sitting there. Pam's required to have 3 sites, each with 1 input station. If you said you can consolidate those if you have 5, you have twice as many, so you add, if you had 6 sites at your courthouse, you could then eliminate the other sites. One of the things these consolidated sites allow you to do is you're better able to load adjust. So if you walk into a Walmart store and they've got lots of checkout counters, you get in the checkout line that has the shortest line, mostly. If you need cigarettes, you might have to get in that one, but for the rest, you're probably getting the one with the shortest line. That's the way a large site can handle things, as voters are able, no one waits a really long time. If, on the other hand, you're going to Arapahoe County and you go to a particular church that has just a couple people there, then you don't leave and go to another site. Even though you could leave, drive there, park, and get in and out in an hour quicker, I have been a clerk encouraging people to go to a different motor vehicle office. I put my exact wait times on a screen in front of them, and I tell them, you could drive to this other site, be served, and be home an hour before it would take you here. And they say, but I've already got my parking spot, and I'm not leaving, right? People don't self-adjust, and if you have a larger site, you can have some of that take place. So the idea would be to use some throughput calculus there to go with them.
And then the next one was to adjust the thresholds. So right now, thresholds go down to 25,000 for the largest counties. So that's where that first threshold is. And then from 25 to 10,000, and then 10,000 and below. And this is just us spitballing, but there is a possible calculus that could be used and then have different requirements based on the tier. So for this group of people, this group of counties, which I think the next slide may have the breakdown of these. Yeah. So these are the what are high population counties. These are the counties that under the 2016 active population, so based on this last election, how many they would all fall into that top category. So that includes everybody down to Mesa, which we all sort of think of as the Big 11, but it also captures these five. So it also captures five more counties, Broomfield, La Plata, Garfield, Eagle, and Fremont, and makes them adhere to that same calculus. One idea is set the mark at 50,000 and go down to 20,000, which would catch a couple of more counties, but that would create a distinct group of people in a tier, and then have a second tier. Once you go to the next slide, which I think is also that one. So that would catch Montrose, would fall into that earlier one, and very soon Summit and Delta would join it. But for now, the next tier would be this group, and then we would have another group of the 10,000 or fewer. And you can see from this group of Summit down to Grand, very few of these are using more VSPCs than are required by the statute. And I think if you ask Pam and some of the other counties, they would tell you that they really don't even have the need for what's statutorily required.
And while we can't tell you exactly what the wait time was at any point in the day, what we can tell you is how many people voted late, which at least gives you an idea of what the wait time was at the end of the day. And so one of the things you can do is you can look up, I'll pick Montrose since they're the top of that list, and we can see that Montrose had one person who voted after 7 o'clock in the entire county. So they clearly weren't having long lines at the end of the day. I can't say they didn't have a line at any point during the day, but what I can tell you is one person was left at 7 o'clock that they had to vote for. And you can do that with any of the counties in this list, and you can see what the needs are.
So one of the things this goes to what Jennifer Levin talked about at the last meeting, and I think this is, I guess, just a question that I have, is to me, especially for the small counties that are geographically large, but have obviously, you know, not much traffic coming into VSPCs, it seems like if there is a reduction, there still has to be a way to accommodate voters that may need or have accessibility challenges. And so I guess what I'm wondering is, shouldn't there also be a discussion around how to grant them access, whether it's using the application that we use for overseas and military voters or something to accommodate voters that I don't think can drive 45 minutes or have, I mean, a lot of these voters have mobility challenges anyway, so I think at least part of this discussion should include a way to accommodate them from a service perspective, should there be obviously a reduction, which would be based on the volume going in and out of the VSPCs, because there's still voters to serve with needs. So that I would just throw that out there as kind of, I think, another piece of this part.
Pass it over, Martha.
Yeah. Hi, Martha Tierney. I want to just piggyback on what Amber said a little bit because I think this is all great data, by the way. Thank you. So helpful to have all this data. And it would be really great if we could get all of these slides, if that would be possible. Mm-hmm. Really, really great data. But when we're thinking about reducing VSPCs in any way, I think we can't just look at where the most people go and what the drive times are, because there's a lot of people that need transit, so wherever it is, it has to be on a transit access. And we have to look at people with disabilities who may not be able to get to the population center. So I don't know, I think Amber's point is a good one. Is there, so if we didn't have an actual VSPC there, why can we think about other ways to serve those voters? And I'd be very interested in brainstorming that discussion as a part of this discussion.
I'd go back to the 8 days versus 15.
Let me just remind people, please state your name. I'm sorry for not.
Steve doing House. I go back to the 8 days versus 15. Do we know what the impact cost-wise is on labor and space availability? Do we really gain a lot if we go down 8 days or 7 days to a shorter period? I mean, I know Matt talked about it last time, how much the cost was, but if we looked at, do we shorten people's stints in labor? Do we have the same labor cost? Do we have the same space cost? Is it harder that way? I'd love to know.
Matt, you want to share that number again? I think you guys had actually calculated it out.
I think, I don't have that pulled up here. I think it was about $85,000 that first week. And that was mostly, can we save it all? What's that? Yeah, that was just labor. That's just for that first week.
So I think the point being there needs to be a place for somebody to go and vote. Remember, we are sending a ballot out to everybody as well. So there's all of those 2 million voting places called your homes where we send out the ballots too. When you talk about access, the ability to access at some point during that process, and if you look at Logan, whether you had three or one, you're not going to change the drive time. And it's important. So clerks look at transit site locations in counties that have a significant transit system. I know Denver does, Arapahoe does, El Paso does. But there are large parts of some of those counties that have no transit service, and so that becomes an irrelevant calculation. And it becomes, if someone does live in a position where they need to use an accessible device, how do we best get them there, whether it's a friend or some other method? There are specific provisions in the law for various things to be used. I think that is part of the discussion we have to have of how to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to vote.
Well, and my thought, too, is you kind of have to look at how people vote. Because, see, the majority of my county, they turn their mail ballot back in. And so, I mean, we had like 5,500 people that dropped their ballot off. And so they're used to bringing, I've trained them well, so they're used to bringing their ballot to my courthouse. And they're used to that. So, and they know when they have a problem or they need something, that's where they go. And so on election day, even though I publicized it a lot every week since December of the previous year, they just don't use those other two sites. And so, I mean, you also have to look at how, that's where I get to every county's different kind of deal. And so, you kind of have to look at that too and how people in your county actually do vote. And again, like for the primary and anything but a general, a coordinated, I have the one site. So that's why they're used to coming to that one site. And so I think you have to look at that as well.
Okay. We've got some other slides that I want to present or have Judd present. It's one of the things you could do. You could do with a reward system which says if you had less than a certain percent, 0.00 whatever, that voted after 8 o'clock, then you have more flexibility in the next election to make adjustments. So we reward counties that had sufficient throughput and give them the incentive to do that. That might penalize a county like El Paso that had an inordinate number of same-day registrations, but it's a results-oriented way of looking at it.
Any more questions or comments on?
Hello. Any more questions or comments on the VSPC size calculation? Just to note that the other counties in the audience are welcome to chime in if they ever want to. So we'll skip forward to the next set of, we go through the formula. This is the formula we discussed. So during early voting, it's a formula based on 30,000 active electors for large counties, and then on election day it goes down to 15. For the medium-sized counties that we've been talking about, it's set with at least three polling centers based on being within that 10,000 to 25,000 active voter criteria, and then the smaller ones just have to have the one. The proposal to sort of create a fourth tier would sort of break these out and just change the way in which we calculate these formulas. Next one. And then since it had been something that we had talked about earlier at the earlier meeting, I did include the primary and coordinated election calculation. So this is the way in which we determine how many locations a county must have for a primary or coordinated election. I know the secretary threw it out as a possibility. There's other people who have talked about just using this calculation for the first week. So that could be a replacement for the first week. Okay, next one. So expanded VSPC hours. So this was something that was discussed at the last meeting, and it corresponds to where you might catch some of the people that you are missing that you need a Saturday for, or that over the course of a week you might not get and are forced to come in on election day because it's 7-7. So the idea is currently our statute is pretty inflexible. It says business hours, reasonable business hours. It doesn't suggest that you're limited by that. It just says that that's what the eight business hours, or the 8 hours on a day between Monday and Friday, and then the four on Saturday. And typically it's designed around this idea of reasonable business hours. And then on election day it's 7-7. Any questions about that? So that would be expanding, might be to say one of those evenings you go from 5 to 7 p.m. Like on a Tuesday or a Thursday or something like that. Next. So changing the ballot mailing deadline, another example of an issue that came up last time. This is the statutory language for that particular section. Basically, it says no sooner than 22 days before the general or primary or any other mail ballot election, and no later than 18 days. So that 22 to 18 day window is the time in which the statute will allow a county to mail. And I would just note that the 22 day in general elections is almost always, there's like one day in which it doesn't apply, but is almost always a holiday. So it's actually, as a practical matter, 21 to 18 days.
We actually changed that in the last.
So can they?
That was in the cleanup bill last year.
Okay.
So we can do it on Friday when it's then.
Fantastic. Good tidbit.
Most of us grew up at a time when the post office was delivering mail the day after it got sent. The mail current delivery standard is 2 to 8 business days for standard mail. That excludes Sundays from that calculation. And so when you say 22 days, that the reality is that people are getting their ballots not that first week, they're getting it the second week now in many of the counties in the state. Now, those of you that live in Metro Denver may not experience that. But we had people from across the state saying they were getting ballots a week and a half after they were mailed from the clerk or from the vendor, depending on how they did it. So when 1303 was contemplated with this number, I don't think people recognized the change the post office was going through and the impact that would have in terms of mail delivery. And obviously, if you don't get your ballot until a week and a half after it gets mailed, or and remember that clerks have a five-day window there for various reasons, so you may not get your ballot till the week before the election under the current system. And allowing clerks to mail sooner would make it easier for people to use that mail ballot. So the parties, we put last year in our cleanup bill, we wanted to expand this and allow clerks to mail the week before. And the parties responded back with negativity on this because of their get out the vote efforts and when they would be able to run their campaigns. And it expands the time of voting, which causes challenges running a campaign. And one of the things that would help the process is to get the ballots in people's hands sooner. And this disproportionately hurts rural Colorado doing it this way.
And then we had some other ideas. We included the statutory reference.
Include the statutory reference on the ones we talked about earlier. Explicitly allow a mobile VSPC location, which we believe is currently permitted under the law, but we don't have any rules or statutory language related to it. Mandate or encourage public schools to serve as polling locations. I'll give you a warning, Ben, but I'm going to put you on the spot here in a minute, and you can tell us all about that meeting we had. Require uniformity in VSPC public comment process. So right now we have a requirement, but not much uniformity in the way in which comments are solicited. And then kind of shift to the SOS's control, the way to approve or understand and contemplate and maybe even have a conversation with counties about various choices that are made about VSPC plans. Currently, we're basically just sort of the we're just the receipt. You know, we get the information at the end and give it to VIP so that it can be put on Google and so forth, but we don't really have much of a part in that conversation. Ben Schlaer is over to our left over here, and we were involved in a conversation this week about using schools, and he's going to give you an update about that.
Yeah, so the idea there, as it says there, is mandate slash encourage public schools to serve as polling locations, and we thought we should talk to the schools about, you know, their interest in that, and the idea behind that idea obviously is to, you know, be able to have those large throughput locations like Douglas County has been able to take advantage of. So the Secretary of State's office has had a good relationship with the Colorado Association of School Boards for quite a long time. Their elections are conducted in odd years, coordinated by the counties. So we've worked with them over the years to make sure that their designated election officials, you know, kind of understand the process. We invited them in to chat with them about what are the barriers in counties where school districts have been reluctant to or have refused to provide polling locations. What are the reasons for that reluctance and the reasons for their decisions not to allow those polling locations? And CASB had some pretty good points about the fact that you know, schools are extremely reluctant to do this. Just from a safety perspective is probably one of their number one reasons, but also they pointed out something that we hadn't perhaps thought about as much, which is that schools are used for a whole lot of different activities already, and so schools are scheduling things even right now. You know, they're scheduling 2 years out. They're scheduling churches to use their large facilities like their gyms and things like that, and absent you know, some fairly detailed discussion with the clerk's offices about how clerks can accommodate the schools to be able to still allow other organizations to use their facilities during election time. The schools have been more likely to just say no. And so the idea with working with CASB is that we think that working with CASB and making sure that the clerks understand the requirements of the schools and that what it is that they're going to need to do in order to make those schools less reluctant to give up those polling locations. You know, if we meet with the schools, a little bit of education from our end, and certainly understanding from them what their challenges are, that they would be willing, most likely, to probably come to the table and at least discuss letting more counties, particularly larger metropolitan counties that need these large throughput locations, to use their facilities. I think it's fair to say that they are not in favor of any type of mandate that would tell them, you know, we're telling you we're coming in and we're going to shut down your schools. But we were encouraged in that meeting by the fact that they were willing to bring the superintendents to the table and to have a discussion about what requirements we might need to develop in order to let counties use schools.
Suzanne, I just saw you walk in. Did you have something to add to that? Because you were part of that meeting as well. Okay. Let me, the concept being, okay, to try it for the 2018 gubernatorial on this voluntary basis with CASB telling the schools, hey, please cooperate, because if you don't in 2019, you may see a bill that is going to mandate certain things, kind of being to try it this way voluntarily for the gubernatorial and hopefully get most of them on board in this voluntary fashion as opposed to the hammer, which has some appeal. Because if CASB's there telling them, hey, if you guys don't do this, it's going to be bad, that may cause many of them to respond in an appropriate fashion. That's the concept. I apologize. I've got another thing I've got to step away from for a while, but Jill will still be here.
Any other questions about these or other ideas? Merlin, could you hand the mic to Merlin?
Merlin Klotz. There's a relationship between the early week and the availability of large locations. Right now, we're required to have 6 locations early. We need 5. But we're required to have 6. If and under the with the growth, we would be required to have 7 in the next presidential already, based on the numbers. Mm-hmm. We need 5. If, however, we had the early week was closed, it gives us access to large facility that replaces 2, which means we need 4, and no voter would be within would be farther than maybe 6 or 7 miles from a polling place. So I think it goes back to what Pam was saying. All counties are not the same. And we need to foot even, we are a fairly large county at 330,000 population. But to put all of us in the Denver mold isn't the best for all of us.
Other questions, comments?
Steve House, Judd, I just hate to ask this, but have you thought about doing a sort of a fiscal review of each idea to see what the financial impact of each one of them would be so that we can discuss that?
It's been bantied about, but that hasn't actually materialized into slides in the presentation yet. So it's sort of tough because they're so interconnected. You know, if you have a high school, well, then you want to have more computers and more people there. So actually there's a commensurate increase in cost, but maybe a high school means you don't have to have 2 other places open. And maybe one of those places you rent. So there's all these things which are tough to measure and quantify comparatively.
So and this is Amber McReynolds. I'm the director in Denver. One thing I would say, we've actually been getting, we haven't used schools since 2012. 2012
presidential election as polling places. And actually, our schools, the reason we got away from them is they actually had the most accessible challenges, ADA issues, mainly because Denver's full of a lot of very old buildings, and they, frankly, from a voting perspective, don't work all that well. And then obviously security is a big issue at schools, and we, you know, got away from that. If it is a day only, I mean, the slide back, you saw we had the same, we had our sites open Monday and Tuesday. We didn't open any new ones Tuesday. So I don't think we personally would, you know, do that. I actually don't think DPS is going to be all that into it. And I also serve on a school board for my kids' school, and we set our 2018 calendar the other night at the board meeting. So, you know, I think the realities around some of this is difficult. And then also, one thing that we've been doing in Denver is we've been trying to use the same sites for municipal elections, coordinated elections, primary elections. And, you know, the schools are not going to close every single time. We've had years where we've had four elections in one year or what have you. So I just... Mm-hmm. I think it is a county-specific type of thing. It may work for some. And then, you know, the one other thing that I know that we don't always talk about with schools is there are people that can't go into schools. So I'm just going to point this out. They can be a voter, but they might not be able to go into a location like that. So I think there are some limitations on schools that may not be everywhere, but they certainly are something that needs to be considered. So thank you.
All right, now I think we shift a little bit, next slide, to a couple of other things which sort of are related to, you know, vote ability or vote access to polling places or drop boxes in this case. And that was to expand the drop box possibilities in various counties and permit counties to substitute a 24-hour drop box or perhaps multiple 24-hour drop boxes for a VSPC location if they met certain criteria, which the secretary and I, we've sort of chatted about. If you go to the next one, you can see the, this was our 24-hour drop boxes in early 2016. They didn't change a lot over the course of 16. There probably were a couple of additions, but this was basically how many you can see, how many per county. This is the legend up here. Most counties have them. There are some counties that don't. We have a plan or a granting program that allows counties that don't currently have a drop box to get a new one, but many counties haven't actually participated in that process as of yet. Any questions on the drop boxes? Let me tell you about the grant program, if you do the next slide. The grant program allows for counties that are fewer than 10,000 active voters will pay 90% of the $4,000 necessary to get a box and install that box, put in the security necessary for that box. And we've had a number of counties that are in that situation who have used that grant to go ahead and get a new box. And then the larger counties, the ones with more than 10,000 active voters, we've set that at 80% of the total cost. By the way, if you think about it, it sort of mirrors or maybe is the exact opposite of the calculation for county reimbursement, kind of. I think that's where we came up with that. $4,000 appears to be a pretty good number to capture all the costs for a drop box, for a standalone drop box. The box itself, depending upon the size that you pick, tend to be in the 1,000 to 2,000 range for one of the boxes, depending upon whether you get a two-pillar box or a one-pillar box. And then you got to put it in the ground, and you've got to, you know, make that particular area accessible. And you've then got to have security. Under our current rule, 24/7 boxes have to have security, meaning that they have to have a videotape of the or a video of the use of that box, so that you can go back and see if somebody attempted to do something adverse to it, potentially breaking it or stealing things or throwing a Molotov cocktail into one or Occasionally you hear about some of this stuff, but it hasn't happened in Colorado as of yet. Counties can apply for consideration for additional. We have, in fact, one set of counties, three counties that have a spot right at the intersection of the three counties that are working together to get a joint drop box, which would be operated by one county, paid for by another county, and then the security features would be done by a third county. So they're kind of working together to come up with a way to solve a problem at one particular location. And then I think the last slide shows those counties that have asked for a drop box in these in the grant program. So the green counties are counties that have asked for a box in the grant program. Many of the counties that were on the map as not having one, sort of on the eastern plains, have asked for money to get a new box. Some of the metro, Denver, who has probably 25 drop boxes, they also asked for the money. No comment there. any questions about drop boxes and maybe some of the ideas surrounding adding a drop box? Does anybody like the idea of canceling out a VSPC requirement by adding additional Dropbox locations? Tracy does. Do you want to comment? Let's get her. Yes, hold on. Let me. We'll go for Lori, and then we'll have Senator or Representative Pavone. Excuse me. Is it not on? You might have to click the, there you go.
Lori Mitchell, Chief County Clerk. For my county, it's very diverse, just like I'm a medium-sized county, just like Logan County. Chaffee County basically has two population centers, and I'm required to have three VSPCs open on Election Day. Prior to Election Day, I'm just required to have one, but we do have two because they're equally busy, so I extend hours for an extra week at the second location. I would love to do away with the third location and put in a drop box.
Okay. Great.
Can I ask her a question? What? Where are the VSPCs in Chaffee County? Where are the two active ones physically located?
Salida is the county seat, and it's our most active one, and the second one is Buena Vista.
Where was the third one go then?
Poncha Springs, which is only 4 miles away from Salida.
Yeah, that's the problem. Okay.
This is State Representative Dan Pabon. So the challenge I have with the premise of, well, if we substitute drop boxes, then we can reduce the first week of voting is this. One, you know, we can have all the conversations we want in this body, but, you know, ultimately we've got to go across the street and figure out the both the policy and the politics of this. And, you know, over the years of my experience, and given the breadth of discussion we've had today on potential maybe mobile locations that might be an option, looking at changing or extending the hours on certain days, you know, having some sort of agreement with an institution that will provide us good access to voting lines, et cetera. I hate to take anything off the table until we have the ability to see all the different variables, all the different pieces, and then start to remove one by one. Because when you pit one against the other, you've basically given yourself one less option in which to engage and negotiate with all the rest of the stakeholders. So that's the reason. It's not a yes or a no. It's why do we want to take anything off the table before we have an opportunity to really vet through each of these different scenarios?
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Other questions or comments? All right, I think that was our last slide. You might check, but I believe so. So I think what the Secretary wanted us to do now, which he'll be back in about 10 minutes, was to have a robust discussion about the possibilities. And the hope is that maybe, as Representative Pabon suggested, we could narrow down the ideas to ones that could be paired together to make it attractive for people on both sides of the aisle that might be interested in engaging in a piece of legislation. Some of this, some of what we've discussed can be done by rule, and we'll try to pursue some of those. Some of the areas where we'd like some rulemaking authority, we currently don't really have it, or we have it in kind of limited ways. So that's also something that we'd like to kind of roll into that discussion. Does anybody have any thoughts or ideas that come to the front of their head that they wanted to throw out? Really? Maybe. Could you hand it back?
I would like to see us end up with an 8-day minimum VSPCs. And if Denver or other counties feel it's necessary because they haven't advertised and got their public converted over using the all-mail ballot, that they have the option of opening VSPCs that earlier week. But an 8-day minimum, I think, would be adequate in many of our counties.
Did you, Merlin, just to remind us, did you open your VSPCs after you mailed ballots before they were required to open in the statute?
We opened them 2 weeks.
So for 2 weeks, but yeah. So nothing more than the requirement?
No.
Okay. Questions, comments?
Hi there, Sue Ryden, former state representative from Aurora, Arapahoe County. See my county clerk here. I would like to have you consider taking away the requirement that the voter must pay for postage, which could give counties that have very small numbers of voters an opportunity to do mail both ways and really save a lot of money that way. And right now the statute requires the voter to pay postage, and if you could just eliminate that, it would give the counties perhaps more flexibility in how they handle that.
So I'll channel the secretary for a second, because I've heard him answer that question before. I think the issue that we would have with that is that we, over the last several elections, have encouraged people to use the drop boxes and trying to get people to use those, and have to this point been very successful at that. In this election, not knowing the exact numbers because different counties input this data differently, but we believe that around 70% of the ballots that were returned, mail ballots that were returned by drop box or drop off at a VSPC. So, and Denver's was higher than that. Many other counties were higher than that, but statewide, it's around 70%. So from our perspective, why would we encourage the 30% or even encourage some of that 70% to you know, go back to mailing the ballot when they're comfortable dropping them off?
I believe that those who drop it off now will continue dropping it off anyway, and the postage wouldn't be paid until it actually showed up at the clerk's office. But it would give those 30% who we don't really know why they're not using drop boxes another opportunity to vote. Mm-hmm. And those could be the disabled folks who can't get out, the elderly who can't get out, people who aren't going to go to the post office and get stamps, young people who don't know what a stamp is. When we say 75%, yeah, that's great. But there's another 25% which could, you know, potentially sway an election, let's say. And we know that they're doing other things, but I'm just saying make that another option. Mm-hmm. And for counties that have a very low voter rolls, it could be a real cost savings for them. And also, I would recommend that if you are still having problems with postal delivery, there needs to be a conversation with the postmasters in those counties to find out what's happening. Because I know in Arapahoe County, we pretty much get our mail the next day or in 2 days. And I have not heard about problem counties in the last election, but I haven't heard all the information about it. But I know previously there was the issue of going down to New Mexico to the Albuquerque General Mail Facility, but then that seemed to have gotten straightened out. So I do not want to be one of those people that discourages people from using the mail because of a few instances where maybe the mail was a few days late.
Yeah, I'll just report that during this election, I think we felt pretty good about the mail service. There were sporadic issues that always seem to pop up. A county receives the wrong mail for whatever reason, even though it's correct on the barcode and so forth. But for the most part, it was a very good election for the USPS. But there is differences in the delivery schedule for people that live in a metro and for people who live in rural. So it's true. I'm in the same boat. I live in Denver. I get my mail pretty much in no more than 2 or 3 days. But we do know that the mail turnaround in some of the more sparsely populated parts of the state can be as much as 7 or 8 days. And in fact, that's what the Postal Service tells us the amount is. So I think Amber has a comment. Oh, next.
Hello, George Athanasopoulos. I just wanted to introduce a question to the state and the counties. Has anyone done any contingency planning for what happens if the NFIB's lawsuit is successful at the Colorado Court of Appeals? What does that look like? And would then we be going to the General Assembly? I'm just throwing out ideas, but has anybody considered what happens if the ruling is in favor of the NFIB?
Well, I think one response is that it would be appealed. So it would be appealed to the Supreme Court. Suzanne is here. I don't know. Do you want to speak to that NFIB issue?
Yeah, when we've talked to NFIB in the past, you know, obviously we were in district court, and, you know, each time they've been, you know, fairly cooperative. We stipulated all the facts. We didn't go through a whole bunch of discovery. It's really just a legal issue, and they have assured us that whatever the ruling is by the court, they're not going to mandate that we, you know, immediately cease whatever we're doing. I mean, Tabor has provisions for that, but they've indicated that any relief they seek will be future relief and not relief, you know, from the 4 prior years that Tabor allows you to bring in a lawsuit. So they would allow for some planning for us to go to the legislature, and there would have to be some other factual things worked out, like how to if in fact they were to win, how do we apportion departments that are intermingled, such as administration and IT, and there's a lot of other factors at play there. But I anticipate that if that ruling were to happen, one, we would, I think either side anticipates that they will appeal whatever happens at the Court of Appeals, and then additionally, it's been a pretty, you know, cooperative agreement, or as much as it can be when you're adverse to one another.
Okay. So on the prepaid postage thing, I was just going to say, I think perhaps it would be good to look at study. I know there's been some studies done, whether it's in the business sector or whatever, on the impact of prepaid postage on return rates for different things. And I certainly know that with UACABA, we didn't used to pay. The federal government now pays the return postage for all overseas and military voted ballots. And I believe that there's been an increase in turnout or return of the ballots coming that way, because that sort of, you know, access to the postage or what have you, which is obviously different internationally, but it did have an impact on return rates amongst those voters. So I think it actually might not be a bad thing to consider further research on, because I think those studies do exist. I don't think that anyone is going to change their behavior for in-person drop-off. We were at almost 80% in Denver. There's more post offices in Denver than probably anywhere in the state, and clearly people like to you know, provide it in person. We've also increased the number of 24-hour boxes. So I think just because prepaid postage on there is probably not going to change behavior, because a lot of our voters like the sticker and they kind of like the idea of doing the in-person drop. So I don't think it necessarily changes, but it certainly may help rural Colorado that has less access to postage and post offices and then 24-hour boxes. I mean, that might be a consideration for folks to consider. In terms of the lawsuit from the county perspective, frankly, the state, we don't get much reimbursement from the state for, you know, we don't get any for most of our elections, but for the larger elections, it actually is our smallest portion of funds coming. You know, we actually get more from the entities, or the county pays the majority. So, you know, I think it's a shifting of resources, but we've never really fully been able to rely on there being a state ballot issue for the reimbursement piece. Obviously, SCORE and all the other things that the state provides to the counties is separate from the reimbursement. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Interesting. That's one word for it. Other questions or comments? Yeah, Jennifer, do you pass the mic around here?
Jennifer Levin, Disability Law, Colorado. I just had a question about the mobility VSPCs, what those would look like.
Amber, do you want to tell us about what your mobile VSPCs look like or would look like? Because I know you're one of the people that has championed them.
Yeah, so the group residential facility piece, so we actually take out, we have a team of judges, we take out the new tablets through the voting system, and then we take out laptops for registration purposes. And the judges set up a site inside the group residential facility, and residents come during a period of time, and we give them the option of either voting the mail ballot that we've produced for them, or they can vote on the tablet. And a lot of them choose the tablet because it does provide them that independent voting experience using the accessible device. And given the new voting system that the state, you know, has selected, it makes it more mobile for that purpose. So I think in the last election, we visited about 40 sites and provided that over the two-week period. So we have teams going out, and they're bipartisan teams. They go out to all those sites and do that. And then for a few years, we've been examining a mobile voting concept, and we'll have more on that coming soon to a meeting or presentation near you. So,
and I am familiar with those, so those are awesome. I love that concept that they have in Denver. So I guess I was imagining something like a mobile building that people would go to, not just for residential people in residential centers, but for people that just vote, you know, that don't necessarily have disabilities. So that's not what that was about. That was more about the ones like Denver use, where they go into the nursing homes and facilities.
Well, it could also be, and I don't want to put words in Denver's mouth, but it could also be sort of the food truck model, you know, a large sort of truck that could be driven around. Hypothetically, it would be set on a schedule. So because we have a relationship with VIP, the Voter Information Project, which does the Google notices for people. You can literally put in your address in Google, and it tells you where you can vote. That information comes from our office, and it would be, so we would need to know where it would be so we could inform VIP so that they can make those changes on a daily basis. But you could literally drive it around your location. Let's hypothetically say it's the metropolitan area. You could be at certain locations on certain days and open for extended hours potentially. So I think that's one of the ideas about using those.
Okay, thank you.
And we looked at the food truck thing. The food truck thing's a little tricky space-wise, but we do have the concept that we're actually going to move forward with. We actually got a demo on it this morning. Is more of a kind of a mobile site setup. It's more of a trailer. It gets set up, so it's more of kind of like a store, not necessarily because it's hard to sort of get people up into the food truck. So this is a different concept than that. We are proceeding with that, mm-hmm. and we'll probably have the concept in place by the summer. So.
Okay. Jack Tate. One question that was brought to my attention is just how will Propositions 107 and 108 affect some of this? My sense is just from looking at general election data between presidential years and non-presidential years, that voter behavior profiles kind of stay the same. But I was curious if you'd given any bandwidth to that issue.
So historically, if you're talking about turnout, historically, presidential primaries are not great turnout elections. We, in this last cycle, the highest state turnout was New Hampshire. The lowest state turnout was in the low 20s. So, but the general swath of state turnouts for presidential primaries, now not caucuses, but primaries, was between 20% and 40%, with some states up into the 40s, and New Hampshire was much higher in the 60s. So, typically, that's where your percentage turnout is. That, for our purposes, would make it comparable to a off-year congressional general election. And I'm not sure that, and you all around the table might have different opinions on this, but there's not a lot of concern about VSPC throughput and so forth in those elections. I think we handle those pretty well. So I'm, from a turnout perspective, not all that concerned about that development. Obviously, there are other concerns that that creates, both technological, because of the way in which those ballots would need to be crafted and used through our current DRE or ballot marking tools, and then expensive process. And obviously, we already have taxed counties, which are perhaps not looking forward to another expensive election to hold, and then an equally more expensive election in the even year primaries that were under 108. So I think money is the biggest concern that I've heard about the primary elections, and less so about turnout and throughput. Am I right in saying that? Is that the will of the group?
For the legislators, on the postage stamp issue, if 30% of the people use stamps, we're talking $400,000, $450,000. If you had to do it, would you have to budget as if 100% would use postage stamps in the budget to get that approved?
If there was enough data to support the 30% number.
If there was enough data to support the 30% number as a consistency, probably not.
Okay, well, so if you guys don't have anything to add to sort of the other issues in addition to the ones we've already talked about, then I suggest we go back to the early slide where we kind of lay out the various options that we were considering, and we just go through them one by one, and you tell me whether or not you think they're a good idea or not. And if you don't like them as an idea, maybe come up with an alternative. Matt.
Judd, I would make the request. Matt Crane, Arapahoe County Clerk. Judd, I would make the request, between the last meeting and this meeting, you've given us a lot of data to take in and kind of chew on. Mm-hmm. I can't speak for the rest of the board, but I'd like a little more time to, you know, let it marinate a little bit. Mm-hmm. So perhaps maybe this would be a better conversation for the next BIAC, once we can go and get our thoughts together and come back and really see how we feel about it.
Okay. Anybody else have thoughts on that?
Martha Tierney, I tend to agree with Matt on that. I'd also, we don't have these suggestions that you've laid out here anywhere. It would be really nice to have them so that we could have discussions with our constituency groups and then get some feedback on what might be doable or not from our constituency groups' perspectives, and also have some time to chew on some other possible suggestions that we could float.
So what we so this is available on the website now. Obviously, it wasn't prior to the meeting, but and we can also send you the slides. The other thing we could do is maybe capture all of these suggestions on one piece of paper, including the ones that have come up after the formal presentation, and send that out to everybody, and then you can take it to your groups and have a conversation with them. Other topics? Yeah.
This is Martha Tierney again. One thing I'll throw out there is that I've been thinking about is thinking about. Clerk Bacon, thank you. raised last time and just thinking about the flexibility maybe that would be beneficial for counties.
It might be Diane.
Yep, I think this is a toast.
Hand this one over. How about that?
So I'll throw this out there for people to chew on a little bit, and that's this. Instead of a one-size-fits-all model, that maybe there is a way to come up with a way to make a proposal in an election plan that would be due well in advance, and then have this body or some other body look at it, review it, consider the data and the individual circumstances that would apply in that county, and then approve it or make recommendations for some modifications to it. Right now, there is not such a process, even with the the outdated mail ballot plan. Uh-huh. And I think it would be I'll speak for myself, not for my constituency group here, but I think if you were to get my side on to something like this, it would not be agreeable to just eliminate a whole bunch of VSPCs or the first week of early voting. That's going to be a non-starter, I think. But some sort of a flexible approach where fact-based data would be presented to say, well, here we might be able to reduce to a fewer number or different hours or mobile sites or something like that in a comprehensive plan. So to Representative Pabon's point, it wasn't just apples and oranges. It was, hey, this is going to be our whole approach about how we're going to meet our voting needs for this county in this election. I think that might be one approach.
Okay. Elena?
This is Elena Nunez. I agree it'd be helpful to have some time to sort through this. I've been looking at the spreadsheet and just trying to do some calculations based on throughput, and it feels like there's more information that would be helpful. And I know that what is provided was based on what was available through SCORE, but maybe hearing from some of the counties next time or between now and the next meeting, being able to dig in a little bit to figure out why there's not a direct correlation. Just because you had more throughput, you may have still been open well after 7 o'clock when you calculate the number of voters per station. So I feel like there's something else there too that we haven't quite hit on yet. And for me, I agree with Martha. I think we need to look at the whole system, and we probably can't look at how the first week is impacted without also looking at Election Day and how it all fits together. But I feel like there's something about the number of users that I feel like I need more information on and a little time to just dig into that a little more.
Okay, keeping in mind that the user number is what it is. It's all we have. We don't have anything that tells us they had this many at noon and they had this many at 7. What we have is, over the course of the day, this many people logged in to SCORE at this location. Right. So it's not going to tell you very much. Now, they may have, so a county might have much more information than that, but we don't. So.
Right, and I think this is Elena. I think it might be helpful to get, even if it's a little bit more qualitative, just a sense of what do we know about the users per location, and were there other factors, things about site design or other things that may have come into play, and is there a sense from other reports about the types of users and what they needed in terms of services, just a little bit more to kind of dig deeper into how do we make sure that capacity is being met throughout the voting period.
So if I was going to try to find that data for you, what would you want? What's the key piece of information, or maybe several pieces that you would want?
Well, I don't know, and I'd like to spend a little time kind of thinking it through, but again, just my initial calculation of, based on the number of users and the number of voters, mm-hmm. just because you had a lower ratio, so more people helping voters, didn't mean you didn't have long lines after 7 o'clock. So mm-hmm. is it talking to some of the sites and digging in more where they seem to do well, even with a higher ratio, to understand, you know, did that site have fewer people using same-day registration, fewer people doing address changes? Was there something else about the design of the site, like number of locations for the voter to vote versus to check in? Are there other factors that maybe we're not looking at? And I don't know exactly what that is, but it might be helpful to just talk through with some of the counties what their experiences were, digging into these numbers a little bit more, because it just feels like there's an overlay beyond kind of just by the numbers that would just be helpful to understand how this is all coming together.
So I would say, I mean, one thing that we could do, which we actually talked about, but the time was, we were so narrow on time at this point. One thing we could do is, looking at this original spreadsheet, is ask the larger counties, the ones that had people that were voting at 7, 8, 9 p.m., 10, almost 11 p.m., to tell us how many check-in stations they had at each one of these locations. Then we're not relying on the number of users at the locations. We're relying on how many check-in stations they had. Now, some counties that changed over the course of a day, I know in Adams County, Christie was adding check-in stations at a couple of different locations because they could see that they had long lines and they were trying to expand. So it's not going to be a perfect piece of data, but we could ask counties to do that, and we would only be talking probably to those top 11 counties, so we would have a pretty good chance of getting that data and having it pretty quickly.
Right. I think that would be helpful, and if there was expansion throughout the day, understanding where counties did that and what their experience was, and that's not, it will not necessarily show up on the spreadsheet in a perfect form, but I think it could help us understand what some of these best practices are, whether they're for VSPC best practices and rule, or whether it's statute, or, you know, I think it just would help inform the conversation and give us a little bit more to work with.
Okay. Jennifer or Amber, both of you had your hands up there.
Yeah, we're probably
going to
say the same thing.
They're going to say the same thing. Okay, great.
Well, I just wanted to point out we've seen a lot of data and had a lot of discussion today on election day times and rates, and both Senator Tate's bill and the discussion where this started was about reducing early vote sites and early vote time. So if, as you guys are thinking about the data that you've seen, I think we need to shift back just a little bit from election day and do give some consideration to the turnout and the usage for early voting locations.
Yeah, and I was just going to say the county, the Clerks Association has what's called a data subcommittee, and Amanda from our office leads it up. And then I have an amazing accountant in our office that, so between the two of them, they put together a projection tool that we've been using for many years, and we modified it for this year. And so now we've got what we projected, and then we've got all of our actuals by hour in there. And then we've marked where, like, the blip in the morning and then the outage in the afternoon, and kind of in the, and you can see the impact that that had, because when you're going into the busy time and you're already behind, you're never, ever going to get back. Caught back up when your peak time period is from 3 to 7. Like, you can't. Nobody can do that. So I would suggest, I think, to your point on maybe getting some more county information, maybe a couple of counties that have some of their planning tools, or maybe they've got their actuals mixed with their projections, whatever that is, maybe share some of that at the next, because we certainly have that. I think it would be great if Amanda presented ours, and it has our actual stations built in. We also projected out how many change of addresses we would have versus same-day registrations versus just straight voting from 14, and then now we've input the data that has the actuals to see how close we were, and in most instances, we were pretty close. A couple sites were a little bit off, but for the most part, we were pretty close. So I think there is a lot to learn from that when you look at within the counties themselves. And then the other thing I would just point out, because we need to investigate this or sort of research this a little bit more, but one thing that happened, and I have a copy of the card at my office, but a significant number of mailings went to Denver voters telling them that they were pledging to vote at a specific location. And I don't know what campaign sent that out or what have you, but I am going to track it, because the cards that I have related to the busiest sites, and those kinds of communications, while sometimes helpful or not helpful. So those are also kind of the impacts. Like, in some of them that I have are some of our busiest sites. And so I do want to track some of that, because I think people thought they had to go to a specific site, which they didn't, as we know. So so I want to also look at that, because I think that that can be impactful. And we have that going on as a side issue in our county. I don't know if others had that, but that was something that we had too. So.
Sorry. Get that.
Thank you, Jack Tate. I've got to run, so I'm going to miss some of the final suggestions and comments. But it is certainly my hope that Senate Bill 71, which will be heard in the next month, will include a lot of the suggestions and recommendations from this group. I'm prejudiced to having those be data-driven suggestions, and I really, I'll be honest, a sense of exasperation, because we wasted 2 years where we've wasted lots of money on empty voter service centers I know counties could use on human services, for example, for citizens. I really am anxious to get something taken care of here, and I'm all ears to suggestions and looking forward to what we can come up with here, and I'm certainly willing to manage the schedule of that bill to accommodate some of the good ideas here. So thank you.
So, Senator, if we had a list of ideas to you in 2 weeks when we did another one of these meetings, would that work for your schedule to get that into a bill if you wanted to do that?
There is already a bill, and it's got a generous bill title, which will probably accommodate most everything I've seen today, even mobile VSPCs.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. With that, I think maybe it would be good. We'll go ahead and set our next meeting. And I ask that over the next 2 weeks, you take what we're going to send you and take this PowerPoint and start talking to your people about it, because that would probably be the basis for trying to use those that next meeting to try to nail down what can work and what can't work. How about 2 weeks from today? Same time, 1:30. That would be February 9th. I see you're all jumping at that opportunity. 9th at 1:30? Does that work?
I think the problem for our side is that it's during I think JDC, the AMPAC committee, and there's another committee, so most of the senators, I think.
Is there a better day?
Tuesday afternoons?
Tuesday?
Well, it doesn't work for me, but
yeah,
I mean,
Wednesday, Thursday,
Wednesday, Thursday,
Fridays. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Any of those work?
Just Fridays.
Can we do Friday at 1:30? Yeah, the 10th. We could even do next Friday, the 3rd. Does that give you enough time to? No, 2 weeks. 10th at 1:30? Going once, going twice? All right, 10th at 1:30 it is. I'll block off a couple hours, and it'll probably be in this room. I'll send you out a notice, and we'll send you a copy of the slides that you saw today. If you want an electronic copy of this, I can send that as well. And then we'll also organize a possible alternative sheet, maybe kind of putting everything together on one piece of paper. Anything else you need? All right. Well, we'll see you on the 10th.